Coming up, many thousands of American prison inmates are locked up in solitary confinement, sometimes for decades. Lucky Severson reports on the debate about whether that's wrong, necessary, or something in between. Also, popular crime novelist James Lee Burke. He tells Bob Faw all Western literature is about the search for salvation.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. As the government shutdown entered its second week, many religious leaders ramped up their criticism of lawmakers in Washington. A coalition of 98 Catholic, evangelical, and mainline Protestant leaders accused elected officials of pursuing an ideological agenda at the expense of vulnerable families and the working poor. Several Christian leaders staged what they called a faithful filibuster near the U.S. Capitol, where they continuously read Bible passages about caring for the poor.
If you mistreat the poor, you insult your Creator. If you are kind to them, you show him respect.
Meanwhile, religious conservatives rallied in Washington at the annual Values Voter Summit. Activists reaffirmed their support for federal budget cuts and their opposition to the Affordable Care Act. The group heard from several Republican members of Congress who've been leading the fight against Obamacare.
And I'm going to suggest a model for how we turn this country around in the next couple of years. And it is the model that we have been following together for the last couple of months to stop that train wreck, that disaster, that nightmare that is Obamacare.
This year's Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. The watchdog group was formed in 1997 to enforce international treaties against the use of chemical weapons. The Nobel Committee said recent events in Syria have underlined the need to enhance the efforts to do away with such weapons. Muslims from around the world are gathering in Mecca for the annual Hajj or pilgrimage. Around 3 million are expected, including more than 14,000 Americans. While diseases spread by travelers are always a challenge during the Hajj, this year health officials are especially concerned about a deadly virus called the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. The virus has already killed dozens of people in Saudi Arabia. Saudi officials are providing vaccinations. American pilgrims are being urged to take extra precautions. Leaders of the U.S. Catholic bishops met with Pope Francis at the Vatican this week. New York Cardinal Timothy Dolan, who's president of the bishops' conference, described it as a meeting of brothers. Dolan said the Pope was curious about issues facing the American church, including the plight of undocumented immigrants. One of the top leaders of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, has acknowledged that there have been times when church leaders and members have made mistakes. President Dieter Uchtdorf told a gathering last week that some Mormon leaders have said and done things that were, quote, not in harmony with the church's values, principles, or doctrine. He didn't specify what those things were. Some analysts said the speech signaled a significant change in tone for a church that has in the past clamped down on dissenters. Now, a special report from Lucky Severson on the debate over solitary confinement for many prisoners, sometimes for decades. Is that morally wrong, necessary to protect others, or something in between?
On any given day, it's estimated that there are about 80,000 Americans locked in a small cell for 23 hours or more per day. It's known as solitary confinement, sometimes called segregation, restricted housing, or if you're one of the inmates, flat time, or the hole.
Imagine yourself locked in a closet.
Heather Rice Minas is with the Faith-Based Justice Fellowship, which is part of the Prison Fellowship Ministries. It takes a position, as do several other religious organizations, that solitary confinement is an unchristian practice. Researchers have found that it often does more harm than good.
Many of the people that they worked with who were held in solitary confinement experienced paranoia, hallucinations, depression. Some reacted eventually with violent, uncontrollable anger.
Bobby DeLello knows what it's like. He was in solitary for over 5 years.
It was a horror show. You go insane in there. You go crazy. You hear guys saying, yeah, hold on, well, what? The ventilator called his name. The thing that really scared me in there is I was watching my humanity and compassion slipping out of my grasp.
John Russer is chairman of the Washington, D.C. Corrections Officers Union. He thinks, as do many prison guards nationwide, that solitary is getting a bad rap. It's necessary to preserve the safety of inmates and guards within the prison.
I do not see how you could run a prison system at all without some type of segregation. And I don't prefer to use the term solitary. Solitary, yes. I think that just has too many negative connotations.
Solitary certainly has a negative connotation with Bobby DeLello. He was sent to prison for 40 years after an armed robbery. DeLello ended up in solitary for trying to escape.
5 years and 1 month for escaping. Nobody got hurt. I embarrassed the Department of Corrections.
When DeLello got out of prison, he volunteered to work with the Quaker program focusing on prisoners' rights. Ironically, it was the Quakers who first introduced solitary confinement, thinking it would give the guilty some time by themselves to feel sorrow for their actions. Now the Quakers are working to abolish solitary. Mississippi Corrections Director Christopher Epps is trying to do his part. His conversion occurred in 2007.
It was a real bad year. Worst year that I ever had since I've been in correction, which is 32 years.
The Mississippi Department of Corrections had a serious problem at the state's Supermax prison, an outbreak of inmate violence, stabbings, killings, suicide. But instead of putting the prison on total lockdown, which is what usually happens, the corrections commissioner took a giant leap.
This was a major decision. I mean, to take individuals that have been locked up for years and take them from a single cell and put them in a general population unit, it was a major decision.
And not one that was politically popular in an election year in a state that prides itself as being tough on criminals. The commissioner, who once locked 1,000 inmates in solitary, removed 700 to the general prison population, and violence inside the prison went down 40%.
I have watched inmates placed in a single cell, and over a period of time, I watched a mental capacity change severely. I think that if you treat them like animals, that's exactly the way they behave.
The hate, anger, and rage was totally out of control. It's hard to explain to you, but cutting dad's heads off in my mind and rolling them down the corridor, that was relieving to me.
But many corrections officers say that's precisely why you need solitary, to house the really bad guys, the assaulters, the rapists, the crazies.
You work in a solitary, no matter where it is, the chances of your being assaulted are through the roof, the chances of having bodily fluids thrown on you. I mean, you are in there in a very, very volatile situation.
The top reasons for placing someone when they look at the records of the disciplinary infraction of why the person went there are not because of significant safety risks, but are actually refusing an order, being in the wrong place at the wrong time, just minor rule
being
violations, being a nuisance.
What all sides agree on is that there are far too many people in prison who are mentally ill, who need help, and that's especially true in solitary.
I guarantee you that the district's jail is the largest mental health provider in the District of Columbia. I guarantee it.
For those in solitary, the question is, are they put there because they're mentally ill, or does solitary cause mental illness?
In today's world, we're getting so many mental health people walking through the door that in some cases it's protective custody. In some cases, they're out in the general population and acting out, and it's causing problems.
We're locking people up in solitary confinement to prevent this violent behavior, and in fact, it may actually instigate because of the impact on their mental health, even more violent behavior.
Anti-solitary activists say it's not uncommon for prisons to release an inmate directly from solitary to the community. A study in Washington State showed that those inmates are far more likely to commit more crimes.
There is a perception that solitary confinement equals safety, whereas I would argue solitary confinement equals a threat to public safety.
97% of the people in prison today are coming to the street. The real question is, how do you want them back in the street? Better or worse than they went in? They're coming out worse.
What's driving the effort to seriously cut back on solitary confinement as much as anything else is money.
In this state, it costs a little bit over twice. It's about $102 a day, and a regular inmate is about $41.51 a day. Everything, for the most part, is room service. You bring his meal to him. You bring his medication to him.
We requested an interview with officials at the Federal Bureau of Prisons, which houses over 12,000 inmates in solitary. They declined the interview, but they have stated their position publicly at a Senate hearing in 2012. Then the Bureau's director said the use of restricted housing or solitary remains a critical management tool. Few argue that solitary should be abolished altogether. Mississippi Commissioner Epps still has about 300 inmates in segregation out of over 22,000 in state prisons. He recommends that inmates in solitary be reviewed every 7 days by an impartial committee. The man who spent more than 5 years of his life in solitary agrees.
When you got an individual that was really, out of control, where do you put them? Okay, you have to put them in a segregation unit. But that doesn't mean you have to keep them there for years and years and years. Don't just put them in there and weld the door shut.
When the Mississippi commissioner closed the state's Supermax segregation unit, it saved the state nearly $6 million annually. That's one reason Commissioner Epps, who is now president of the American Correctional Association, has become a Pied Piper against solitary confinement as he travels around the country.
We have to, I think, stop talking about tough on crime and get smart on crime. And so you and our tax dollars can be spent the way it was meant to be spent instead of trying to impress someone.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Jackson, Mississippi.
We have a profile today by Bob Faw on the enormously successful crime novelist James Lee Burke. His characters reveal the worst of human behavior, but his themes are classic and sometimes biblical. The mystery of evil, the struggle for salvation.
James Lee Burke, now 76, not only pounds a speed bag nearly an hour every day, he also still writes feverishly every day, churning out novels which have sold more than 10 million copies. Burke's crime stories are modern morality plays about a world which is, in his words, intransigent and corrupt, a place where moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal.
I write about the world I've known, put it that way, and I try to write about it in an accurate fashion.
Burke has been called America's best novelist, the heavyweight champ of nostalgic noir. But success didn't come easy. One of his early books was passed around to publishers for 9 years.
It was rejected by 111 editors, and it's a record in New York. This is the most rejected book in the history of publishing. Everyone says that.
Once published, it was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. Until then, Burke had to take jobs as a surveyor, reporter, teacher even social worker on Skid Row. But he never gave up writing.
It's a vanity, it's a conceit. Every artist has this notion that he sees the truth about the world in an exquisite, perfect fashion, and he's compelled to tell others of his vision. You know, he will have no peace until he does so. That's the compulsion.
After all that time in the literary wilderness, James Lee Burke struck pay dirt, creating Louisiana detective Dabe Robicheaux, who, like Burke, is a recovering alcoholic and is portrayed here by Alec Baldwin.
I want to drink all the time. All those colored bottles.
The subject now of two motion pictures and 20 novels, Dabe Robicheaux, tormented by alcoholism and depression, is a two-fisted, St. Augustine-quoting lawman who navigates a demimonde rife with perversion and bloodshed. Damaged, but following an unerring moral compass, Robicheaux is Burke's modern-day knight-errant.
Actually, his character is based, one, on the everyman character in the medieval morality and religious dramas. But also, primarily, I see his antecedent as the good knight in Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. It's a great character, the good knight, this chivalric figure who is always a peacemaker in the story of the pilgrimage.
That pilgrimage toward redemption, says Burke, is what defines good literature.
As far as redemption is concerned, I'm speaking as an artist. I believe the central theme in all of Occidental literature is about the search for salvation. It is the basic theme of Western literature, and that's what we all end up painting, acting out in dramas, or writing about.
Okay, Missy gets the last one, because you were a slowpoke. All right, come here.
Robicheaux has brought Burke fame and fortune, two horses on 120 acres, nestled in a towering tree-lined valley near Missoula, Montana, where he lives with Pearl, his wife of 52 years, and an impressive firearms collection he so lovingly maintains.
Boy, this is a beautiful pair of guns. Pearl gave me these for Christmas.
And still, he writes 1,000 words on a good day.
It's an incremental discovery. That's what I believe. The right line is there. You got to wait and you got to hear it. You got to have to hear it. It's all in the unconscious. You just have to listen for it. It's there.
Patiently copying onto a computer words he's earlier scribbled into one of his many notebooks there at his bedside when he needs to write something down in the middle of the night.
Piece of dialogue here that I know, I don't know where it goes, but it goes somewhere in the novel.
In his two latest books, Burke draws upon both his Roman Catholic upbringing and education in classical literature. His voice, says the New York Times, has grown more messianic, more biblical.
This is from Isaiah chapter 43, verse 20. The wild beast will honor me, the jackals and the ostriches.
And it's not just using an inscription from Isaiah or language suffused with religious imagery.
The stories I've written are the Passion Play. I mean, they clearly come out of the New Testament. The imagery, the icon, all have to do with Golgotha. That's what they're all about.
Page-turners and major motion pictures, yes, but what Burke is really doing is grappling with some unanswerable mysteries, such as, are there people who love evil for its own sake?
Or could a black wind blow the weather vane in the wrong direction for any of us and reshape our lives and turn us into people we no longer recognize?
You talk about the darkness that can live in the human breast. You talk about men who have no parameters.
Yeah, there's no explanation. It's not just an aberration. It's something that allows them to step over a line where, as Dabe Robicheaux says, they murder all light in their souls. Dabe says they try to erase the thumbprint of God from their souls. But nobody knows why.
In his writings, he might have wrestled with some of those eternal mysteries, but James Lee Burke does not pretend to have found the answers.
When you get down into the top of the ninth, when you're standing on third base, you realize the great mysteries were going to remain the great mysteries. If wisdom comes with age, it has bypassed me like a freight train.
In the end, Dave Robichaux, though he rarely turns the other cheek, does find a kind of peace and a perspective about what is important in life.
At the bottom of the ninth, you count up the people you love, both friends and family, and you add their names to the fine places you've been and the good things you've done, and you have it.
That's it. That's wisdom.
That's it, brother. I don't know if it's wisdom or not. It's the way it is.
A no-nonsense approach, much like advice Burke was given long ago as a Catholic schoolboy.
A Franciscan told me once, don't keep track of the score. The score will take care of itself. You never measure yourself in terms of days or weeks or months. In theology, it's called the fundamental option. You make your choice, you make your troth, you never go back on that silent contract you make, and you'll be pleasantly surprised at the arithmetic on the scoreboard in the bottom of the ninth. And that's how it works.
James Lee Burke at 76, confronting the past, embracing the present, pounding away hard as ever. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Bob Fall in Lolo, Montana.
A massive outpouring of grief in Jerusalem this week. More than 500,000 Israelis filled the streets to mourn the death of influential former chief Sephardic rabbi Ovadia Yosef, who died at the age of 93. Yosef was the spiritual leader of the ultra-Orthodox Shas political party. On our calendar, Hindus have two popular holidays celebrating the triumph of good over evil. First is the nine-day festival of Navaratri, which honors God in the form of Universal Mother, often known as Durga. Then Monday is Dussehra, which marks the story of Lord Rama's killing of an evil demon. And, as we noted, Muslims are observing the Hajj, which culminates with the three-day festival of Eid al-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice. It recalls Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his son in obedience to God. Last year, as millions performed the Hajj in Mecca, children at the Dar al-Hijra Islamic Center in Falls Church, Virginia, practiced the rituals themselves. Imam Johari Abdul Malik was our guide.
The journey to this house once in your lifetime is, in the Islamic tradition, a requirement. And so people will leave their familiar and they will come to this house established by Abraham. But 6 million people cannot fit inside this house, and so people will pray around the house. Seven circuits around the Kaaba is the tradition. When Hagar was left in Mecca by Abraham with her baby, she was looking for water. The angel came and sprung a well. And it is a kind of holy water. Then they will run between the hills of Safa and Marwa in the way that Hagar did. Mina is a tent city. And they will live in this tent and perform five daily prayers. The Prophet Muhammad, when he made his pilgrimage, he came to the top of this hill. He gave his final sermon. It is the belief that after one completes this day on Arafah, that all of your sins are forgiven. The Prophet instructed his companions to collect some pebbles. And the next morning after Arafah, come and throw symbolically their pebble like Abraham threw at the devil when he was tempted. While we are in Mina throwing our stones, people in Mecca are celebrating Eid. It's like Thanksgiving on steroids. We sacrifice a sheep and we give that food to the needy around our planet. My Hajj is not valid unless I make the sacrifice.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. And visit our website, where there's always much more and where you can listen to or watch each of our programs. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, music from the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist. Their CD, Mater Eucharistae, was number one on Billboard's classical traditional chart for 7 straight weeks.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.